Hello, and welcome to show number 2520 of Eyes on Success, a weekly program empowering the visually impaired with expert advice, personal stories, and the latest in technology and accessibility. I'm Nancy Goodman-Torpy.
And I'm Pete Torpy.
There's a bill that should be being presented in Congress again this year, anytime now, and it's called the Medical Device Non-Visual Accessibility Act. And this would make, if it's passed, Class 2 and Class 3 medical devices that people would use at home, such as insulin pumps, CPAP machines, dialysis machines, blood pressure cuff, home chemotherapy type devices, make all of these accessible for people who are blind or visually impaired. And most of these devices right now are not.
The accessibility of medical devices has certainly been improving over the years, but it still is not perfect. And we'll be talking about some of those devices today.
Diabetes is particularly prevalent among blind people, in part because diabetes can cause blindness. So how does somebody with a visual impairment manage their diabetes independently? We'll talk with Veronica Elsie and Patricia Maddox about accessible insulin pumps, continuous glucose monitors, and their advocacy work for non-visual medical tools. Both of them share their personal journeys navigating diabetes care as blind individuals. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's assortment of quick but heartfelt tips come from Veronica Elsie and Patricia Maddox. Here's Veronica first.
I would say reach out. Reach out for help would be one. I would say another tip is you can do more than you might think you can. And the third thing that I thought of is managing your diabetes can just become part of your life rather than becoming your life. Those are three things that popped into my head.
And now, Patricia.
I would like to say to learn as much as you can about your own diabetes and then always be your own best advocate. You know, you need to advocate for yourself because you know what's best for you, but you have to be educated to know what it is that you need.
Mm-hmm. That's perfect advice. Support for Eyes on Success is provided by
the Blind Institute of Technology, a global nonprofit organization dedicated to advancing accessibility and inclusion. BIT offers training programs and connects skilled professionals with disabilities to career opportunities. More information is at blindit.org.
And by
Biped AI, the manufacturer of NOAA, an all-in-one mobility vest. NOAA provides GPS navigation, detects obstacles, and describes surroundings using cameras and AI. Available through many distributors. More information is available at biped.ai.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
Let's start by meeting Veronica and Patricia.
Today we have two guests with us, and I thought, Veronica, perhaps we can have you introduce yourself first and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. I'm Veronica Elsie. I live in Santa Cruz, California. I have been totally blind all of my life from retinopathy of prematurity. I worked as a symphony musician, composer, recording artist, and now I have my own recording studio. I was diagnosed as a type 1 at the age of 34 in 1988 following a serious injury. And I have been making use of insulin pump therapy since 1991, and it truly did change my life.
So when you say type 1, that's type 1 diabetes.
Yes.
And our second guest is Patricia. Patricia, you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes, thank you. Yeah, my name is Patricia Maddox, and I live in Vancouver, Washington. I did not lose my sight until later in life, but I did develop type 1 diabetes very early on in my life. So for me, that came first. At the age of 11, just before my 12th birthday, I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes and immediately, of course, had to start insulin injections because we require that just to stay alive. At the age of about 22, I started to develop some diabetic retinopathy, which is an eye condition that can happen with diabetes, especially as a result of high blood sugars. Way back 50, 60 years ago, we didn't know near as much about diabetes as we do now. So sight loss was extremely common and very often did occur about 10 to 15 years after diagnosis. So it was really at the end of my college education that I was diagnosed with severe bleeding, hemorrhaging in my eyes and did receive laser treatment. I was going to my last year of school to become a dietitian. I did go on to become a registered dietitian at the University of California in San Francisco, and they did have wonderful doctors there, which I was very fortunate and did receive numerous laser treatments for my eyes, which did stop the hemorrhaging. It left me with a little residual sight loss. It was minimal at that time. I could still drive, but I had night blindness, color blindness, couldn't see people when they would write with a pencil. It was difficult to read. But otherwise, I functioned relatively well for many, many years after that. And it wasn't until the late 1990s that my vision just seemed to be going down and down ever so slowly. So I didn't have the sudden vision loss like some people do. It was just very slowly over a period of over 50 years until now I basically see just a little bit of light in my right eye.
So you both said that you have type 1 diabetes, and I tend to associate that with children. But Veronica, you said you got it in your 30s.
Yes, they used to call it juvenile diabetes, and now they realize that it can happen at any age. You can be 80 and be diagnosed as a type 1 diabetic.
Support for Eyes on Success comes from our listeners and corporate sponsors.
For more information about airing promotional items on the show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
This week's focus topic is about accessible equipment that blind diabetics can use to manage their disease. We'll also talk about the advocacy work for non-visual medical tools that both Veronica Elsie and Patricia Maddox are involved in.
Well, as many of us know, diabetes can be a very difficult disease to deal with, and it has many adverse effects on different parts of the body. And in particular, you guys have talked about how it affected your eyesight. But it is important to keep diabetes under control, and I expect that if it is kept under control, that you can avoid some of those adverse effects. And I guess what we want to talk about today is, for a person who's visually impaired, some of the devices that we have to control diabetes aren't very accessible, are they?
I use an insulin pump to administer insulin for my diabetes. I've used insulin pumps since 1997, and I did have sight then to manage it by myself because they really weren't accessible for people who are blind to completely manage themselves. They were devices that you had to drop insulin, insert a syringe in it, and press a series of buttons, and it had a menu on a digital screen that, you know, had no voice feedback. And so as my vision went down, it became more and more difficult to manage my insulin pump without assistance from my husband until last year. They came out with a new pump called the Tandem Mobi. And this pump, instead of being managed like the old pumps from a screen directly on the pump that doesn't have any audio or even beeps necessarily to let you know what's going on, It's managed entirely by an app on the phone, on the iPhone at this point. This pump can't be used on the Android phone yet, but that will be coming. And so instead of using a touchscreen on the device itself, because VoiceOver talks to me on my phone, I'm able to go in, do the programming, go through all the menus, you know, do basically everything that normally would have been done previously on the touchscreen of the pump myself.
For anybody who doesn't know, an insulin pump is a device that you keep attached to your body, and depending on what it's measuring of your blood sugar level, it gives you however much insulin you need at that time, correct?
Correct. It's basically, I describe it as like a miniature IV. You've all seen IVs in the hospital. They hang on a big rack and it goes into your arm. This goes in just under the skin, so it doesn't go into a vein. But it's basically the same thing. It's administering medicine continuously. The insulin is going in continuously. And then when you eat a meal or you have a high blood sugar that needs to be remedied, you take some additional insulin through, in my case, the app on the phone. I just go into a particular tab on the app and enter the amount of insulin that I need. But you're right, it also measures my blood sugar because it's connected to my Dexcom CGM, which is a separate diabetes device that goes under my skin in another place on my body that measures the glucose in the interstitial fluid on a regular basis and sends that information via Bluetooth to the pump. And then the pump has all kinds of built-in programs that I can't begin to understand that does some computations on how much insulin it thinks you need at that kind of very moment in time.
So this sounds like a closed feedback system where you have one device measuring your insulin levels and the other device controlling your insulin levels based on the feedback from that device. Is this relatively automatic?
Yeah, the one device is not measuring the insulin, it's measuring the blood glucose. And then that gives the Bluetooth feedback to the insulin pump. And you do have personal settings that you and your doctor help come up with that are mathematical formulas because different people need entirely different amounts of insulin. So there's some initial programming that needs to be done to the pump for your own personal needs. And then based on all those mathematical formulas, say if your blood sugar is 192, it runs it all through this mathematical formula and says, okay, I need to just squeeze out a little bit of, you know, maybe 3/10 of a unit of insulin, and it just does it. It's not an entirely closed loop system yet, which means a person still has to enter when they eat. They have to enter the amount of carbohydrate they eat in terms of grams. And that then tells the pump how much insulin to take for the meals. But the in-between meals is quite automated.
Oh, so this is why you need the device to be accessible. There really is some part that you have to control and you have to manage.
Yeah. And also there's the hardware. I mean, we're just talking about the software, the app on the phone. There's the pump itself, and then there's the little cartridges that hold the insulin that have to be changed every 3 or 4 days. And you have to drop the insulin into that. But my particular pump has a little built-in syringe. And I, with through touch and feel and sound, I can drop that insulin and listen to when I'm getting the bubbles out of it to make sure I'm clearing all the bubbles out of the system and insert it into the pump itself. And then once it's inserted onto the hardware, you go back to the app to do all the rest of the process of filling insulin through the tubing. And then physically, of course, you insert the site into the body tissue, and that's a touch and feel type of thing that can be learned. There's a learning curve to do that without sighted assistance. And it's just been a godsend for me because my husband was the only other person in my life that knew how to do this, that was willing to do it. And I was just fearful that something would happen to him. He's 79 years old. And, you know, what if something happened to him? And in fact, one day he ended up in the ER and my pump was low on insulin. My phone was running out of battery and there was no place to charge it. And this just gives me a wonderful freedom that I can now take care of my diabetes and not be fearful that I have to depend on someone else at least every few days to be there to assist me.
That's fantastic. So Veronica, do you use a similar device?
I use a different insulin pump, and actually I've used several since 1991, and I want to back up just a little bit for some of your listeners who might identify this with this in thinking about whether to switch to an insulin pump and a continuous glucose monitor, because I was already blind when I first became diabetic. The first thing I had to learn to do was to do finger sticks, because we didn't have continuous glucose monitors then. And I cannot tell you how much time I spent sitting at my vanity, sobbing like a three-year-old, because I couldn't tell if I had enough blood on the strip. I couldn't get blood out of my finger, or I'd get close and all the blood would run off before it hit the strip. It was a mess. I felt blind and stupid, and my fingers hurt. So if anyone out there is newly diagnosed and is feeling frustrated, you have company. And that is what really prompted me towards some of the technology. And I didn't do well on doing several daily injections. So I went on the pump, because when one does daily injections, you have to take a long-acting and a short-acting insulin. The long-acting we call basal rates, and that's what gets you through the day, whether you eat or not. That's what Patricia was referring to when she talked about the things you set up with your doctor in your pump. And then the short-acting you take when you want to have a meal, when you're high, when you need that extra insulin. So I decided I wanted the flexibility. I didn't like eating in public and trying to manage a pen and stick myself in public, because I was a klutz and I was always stabbing myself. And I just didn't, I was afraid to eat in public. 21.
So the pump you have now, is that accessible?
Yeah, it's made by a company called Insulet, and it's called the Omnipod 5. And the Omnipod 5 works with an iPhone app, just as the Mobi does. But the Omnipod 5 doesn't have tubing. So what you do with the Omnipod 5 is you have, they call it a pod, and it's like a square piece of plastic. And you fill a syringe with the amount of insulin you want. It can hold up to 200 units, which is a couple days worth for most people. And you fill the pod from that syringe, and then you use the app to set your pod up, and you just pull the stickum off and you stick the pod onto your body. That had a learning curve for me with how to get the pod to be where I wanted it to be and not wrinkle the tape, because you're in trouble if you do, and things like that. But the pod just sticks there, and most of the time it's on my arm. You just have to be a little careful sometimes about going through a doorway. Don't run into that corner of the wall, because you don't want to hit your pod. But the iPhone app is actually quite fantastic. We're still in the stage where there are some buttons that aren't labeled, and you have to just kind of pay attention and learn a couple of little pieces of gobbledygook. Oh, yeah, that means I'm here. But it works really well. It's quite simple. And I do not require any assistance to use this Omnipod insulin pump with my phone. You can look at the status. I can go look at how my phone is doing, of course, but I can look at how much insulin is left in the pod. I can look at when the last time was I took insulin, all kinds of things. The Omnipod 5 also works with a continuous glucose monitor. And that can be done. It's really quite simple. The biggest challenge for me, frankly, was that having a pump that runs from an app on your phone means you absolutely must use Face ID and passcodes on your phone. And I hate Face ID.
And this is a security issue, so nobody else can come along and tweak your programming?
Yeah.
So you guys mentioned two specific insulin pumps that are very accessible, it sounds like. Are the variety of products on the market that are available, are they generally accessible, or are these pretty special?
These are pretty special, and the task force is working with other companies. Another popular pump that your listeners might hear their doctor is suggesting is by Medtronic, and it's called the 780G. It's a very popular pump, but it is absolutely inaccessible to us.
So you just referred to your task force. This is presumably a group of people with similar interests in accessible insulin pumps. Can you talk about that a little bit and what kind of work you guys are doing?
Sure. The Insulin Pump Task Force, right now we have 7 members. And originally the group was started by the NFB, but we are now independent and we are all insulin pump users. And the purpose of the Insulin Pump Task Force is to encourage and help manufacturers develop insulin pumps and related management gear that people who are blind or low vision can fully use safely, effectively, and completely independently to manage their diabetes. So we have established liaisons at most all of these manufacturers. We meet with them regularly. We share our experiences using their pumps, talk about their pumps, make suggestions for their pumps. So we definitely are working from the user perspective. We have been really fortunate to have some great people at some of the companies and have made a lot of progress in this arena.
I guess you find them to be pretty receptive to your suggestions and you've noticed some changes over the years.
We would not have had these 2 accessible pumps if not for the work we did.
You've been doing great work interacting with the various companies, getting them to add accessibility features to the insulin pumps. What other work has your task force been doing in the bigger arena of other medical devices?
There's a bill that should be being presented in Congress again this year. It was presented last year, any time now, and it's called the Medical Device Non-Visual Accessibility Act. And this would make, if it's passed, Class 2 and Class 3 medical devices that people would use at home, such as insulin pumps, CPAP machines, dialysis machines, home blood pressure cuff, home chemotherapy type devices, make all of these accessible for people who are blind or visually impaired. And most of these devices right now are not. And this hopefully will be presented to both the Senate and the House. And then if it does get passed, there would be some rulemaking that has to be done by FDA, and it could take up to like 3 years after that. And then at that time, manufacturers of these types of devices would be required to make them in such a way that people who are blind or low vision can use them independently.
Well, let's keep our fingers crossed. Well, it sounds like you guys have done some great advocacy work for insulin pumps and other medical devices, and that's really been a great benefit to lots of people.
We hope so.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
Now for this week's final item, how to learn more about accessible insulin pumps or the Accessible Insulin Pump Task Force, and how to contact Veronica Elsey and Patricia Maddox.
Well, if people are interested in learning more, I assume they can contact you two if they had questions?
My email address is Veronica, V-E-R-O-N-I-C-A, it's laurelcreekmusic.com, LAURELCREEK, MUSIC.com. I would also suggest that if any of your listeners want to find out more about how to use some of these devices as a blind person or get in touch with other blind people who are doing this to find out, hey, can I really do this? It might be a good idea to visit ACBDA, this stands for ACB Diabetics in Action. So it's acbda.org. Or you can send an email to acbda.org, as in org. So it's acbda.org@gmail.com. I think it's really important for any listener who's feeling alone to understand that no matter how long we've been doing this, we are all here to help and support each other. And it's really going to be helpful to have a nice chat with somebody who's doing this.
Patricia, do you have a separate contact information you'd like to share?
It's P Maddix, which is my name. So it's PMADDIX@comcast.net. Right. And any of the members of the task force are always more than willing to chat with newcomers, you know, wanting to investigate accessible devices. They're all very passionately involved in this advocacy. And, you know, one of the things is that things are going to continue to change. So once we have like two or three pumps that are accessible, we can't sit back and relax, because next year there's going to be more and more, and there'll always be more devices. So our job at advocacy is going to be an ongoing thing, and we need everybody's help and support on that, and interest and input for experiences.
Isn't that the truth?
It would be good to just give a quick shout out and mention of the members of the Accessible Insulin Pump Task Force. Of course, you have all met me and Patricia. We also have Randy Knapp, Ed Worrell, Mary Davis, Melanie Torrance, and Tom Tobin.
And we've spoken with Tom several years ago on this subject. But things change all the time.
Yes, exactly, exactly. So just in case any of your listeners might know any one of them, then feel free to contact them and go, "Hi, help."
So one more quick question. Veronica, you mentioned your music. And for anybody who's interested in hearing some of that, can you give that website?
LaurelCreekMusic.com.
And I can attest there is some very nice music on there.
Thank you. I enjoy myself, and writing the album Diabetes Melodious was really good therapy for me. And I use the sounds of many blood glucose meters and insulin pumps as instruments, just like I do on some of my other CDs, which feature the Guide Dog Glee Club.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yes, I do have singing guide dogs, and they are not accompanied by instruments. They are just dogs.
What fun. And in case you missed it, you can find all that information if you activate the show notes link for episode 2520, which is this episode, on our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net.
That's it for today's show. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about advancing treatments for inherited retinal diseases. Research is key to fighting blinding eye diseases. We'll talk with Jason Menzo, CEO of Foundation Fighting Blindness, about advancing treatments for inherited retinal diseases, funding research initiatives, and launching new mental health resources to support individuals with blindness and low vision.
Thanks for joining us this week, and we hope you'll all join us again next week.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
You can access the full archive of previous shows, subscribe to the podcast, and much more by going to our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net. If you have questions about anything you've heard on the show or have suggestions for future shows, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
Thank you for listening, and have a nice day.